Welcome to Fat Grandpa. It's a lifestyle. Our topics will cover the latter part of life and how to get the best out of these years. Here's your host, Fat Grandpa.
Hello, and thank you for joining the show today. My guest today is Russell Christensen, who is a survivor of a major cardiac arrest while playing pickleball in Mesa, Arizona.
Good morning, Fat Grandpa.
Fat Grandpa, you got it. That's me. We're going to talk about your cardiac arrest more towards the end because it's a great story. The people that helped, your family, everything. But I want to know a little bit about you, and we'll start out your years growing up, like your pre-high school years. Just tell us a little bit about where you were born, whatever you want to tell us.
I was born in rural North Dakota, up at Bobells, North Dakota, in a farm family. I had two older sisters and a brother that's a year older and a brother that's a year younger. And we actually went to rural school, and we always kid, of course, that we walked both ways.
You probably did.
Yeah. Well, we did walk to school a lot. We did. It was a mile and a half away, and we were actually on top of a hill ridge, so we could sit down and look over the whole prairie out there and actually the school. And in the wintertime, occasionally, I even went on a sled with the neighbors and everything. It was an enclosed old grain sled pulled by horses. And actually, on a very cold winter days, that's how we would go to school if there was a lot of snow and we couldn't deal with the traffic.
Oh, good old days. So I'm guessing you went to high school. I don't personally know that, but if you want to tell us a little bit about your high school and where it was at.
Well, yeah, over time we ended up in going to high school, which was 50 miles away in Bobells.
Don't tell me you walked.
No, we didn't walk. All right. Yeah, well, they had the buses, but as a farm boy, you know, you drive early, so. Dad made sure that there was a way that we could make a little money off cattle and 4-H and all that good sort of thing. So when I was a freshman in high school, we had a car. And so I could drive the car back and forth to school and for extracurricular activities. Of course, there was always chores at home, so we had to get home and do chores, you know. That was a bad thing about growing up rural. You'd be having a good time, and Dad'd say, well, the cows need to be milked.
So was there any sports in your life when you were a younger man?
Well, I played football and started on the team for 3 years and loved our football team. We only got defeated one time in those 3 years. So it was with a bunch of good athletes and a good group of guys.
And what's the name of your high school?
Bobells Eskimos.
The Bodell's Eskimos. And how big of a senior class did you have?
I was in a class of 19.
19. And where were you ranked on the list? 18th?
Right there at 18. Right there, yeah. At 18. Thank gosh for Lori Chris, our neighbor, that he was 19.
Oh, yeah. He'll like that. Hopefully he listens in. So when you got done with high school, what did you go on to do?
Well, you know, we worked all through high school for neighbors and et cetera. And we had a neighbor in a town about 7 miles away. And he had cancer. And so I go and helped him take care of his farm. And during the fall, he passed away. And I finished taking his crops off and doing all that sort of thing. And his brother came up from Minnesota to help finished the fall season out. And then when he got done, he says, what are you doing? He says, I got a job for you. I said, what kind of a job? Well, he says, I own a mink ranch. You want to come down to Minnesota and work on my mink ranch? Well, I hadn't picked out a college or decided exactly what I wanted to do. So I did. And that's how I got to Minnesota, was through a brother. And it was kind of comical because one was a run for Senate in North Dakota as a Republican, and the brother did it in Minnesota as a Democrat. So
oh, wow.
I got diversity.
I guess you do. That's kind of usually sports related, but not necessarily politics. So you obviously didn't stay there. Where'd you go next?
Well, then I met a young fellow that was a next door neighbor, and we got along really well. And he was a senior in high school, and he was going to Wilmer Junior College that next year. So in the spring of the year, I went back to North Dakota and I worked in the oil fields, saved up some money. And in the fall of the year, I went to Wilmer, Minnesota, and went to Wilmer Junior College. And while I was going to college, that's when I met my wife.
And you paid for your own college.
Basically, I paid for my own college for the first few years, and then I ended up in the service.
So you met your wife, Carol, who I know, who is a beautiful little woman. And how long before you got married, or when? How long have you been married? Or
well, we've been married 57 years. I went to Cuomo Junior College. I met her there and worked a year or so. And I called home to my draft board and said, "Stella, what's going on? Where am I at in the draft?" She said, "Well, you're number one." So I knew I was going to go that summer into the service. And I loved that little girl. I pursued her and got her to marry me on March 18th, which is kind of ironic because we have St. Patrick's Day on the 17th, our anniversary on the 18th, and my birthday on the 19th.
So you're always looking for a party. I do know that.
Yeah, we party.
So back to when you guys got married, I mean, was it easy? Did you have a lot of money? I mean, did you get drafted? Did you?
Well, my dad said, "Where can I get you for your wedding?" And we weren't people of a lot of money. He said, "Dad, I could use $200. I could pay the rent in Hutchinson, Minnesota, where I was working at the time." And then eventually, knowing I was going into the service, we went back to North Dakota, and I went to work in an oil field until I got drafted in and went in July of 1967.
And how many years were you in the service?
I was in 2 years.
2 years. And you went to Vietnam, correct?
I did go to Vietnam. It was, arrived in Vietnam actually on January 1st, 1968. And I guess the odd part of that was is that we crossed the international date line, so we didn't have a New Year's Eve. We just went from one first to the next first.
So you got a party coming sometime.
I should have a party.
Yeah, you coming. Got. Yes. You need yeah. another one.
Yeah.
So let's. So when you got back out of Vietnam and you got back to the States and you and your wife settled down, where did you settle down at? And did you have any kids? Or
well, after these years and my experiences, I finally decided I went come back and worked in oil fields a while in Bowbells, North Dakota, and I decided I wanted to go on and get a business degree. And so I enrolled at the University of North Dakota. Again, I worked in oil fields to help make me some money. And the GI Bill helped out considerably. And so we lived in College Mary's housing.
Let's get back to the service now. What did you actually do in the service?
Well, you get drafted in the service, you do your basic training. Mine was in Washington State. And I was concerned because all I know about Washington is wet, rainy. It's going to be one muddy basic training. And miraculously, it rained one time while we were in Washington. It was very good. Then I got assigned to the Medical Corps and training in San Antonio, Texas, Fort Sam Houston. I then went over to Vietnam, got assigned with the 92nd Engineering Battalion, and we built a bridge. Battalion did on Phu Cong north of Saigon, and for the most part things were uneventful, but occasionally there was someone got hurt and some drownings and some things that went on and some shooting.
Oh, not the major, just some drownings and shootings.
So. Yeah, just you know,
everyday life,
little part of war. And but one night we got bombarded. Mortars were dropped on us as And of course, I'm the medic. First thing we do is we all head to shelter, bunkers. And I got called on. I heard someone hollering, grabbed my bags, and went out and continued throughout the night, taking care of 17 wounded. Unfortunately, we lost two guys. But I continued to work all night with them until they were evac'd. And for that, I got a decoration of valor, and I've kind of always felt that it probably shouldn't have been me. I was doing my job, and I had this friend of who at that time, when it was a very racial period, he was the cook for the company, and he was a black man, and he was with me all night, and I've always felt
This is the part I like. Keep, give it to us. Yeah,
I've always felt that this man should have got the decoration, not me, because it was part of my duty. But it didn't happen that way. But I'm proud of my service. And
well, thank you for your service. Yeah. You know, that's a great story. And we're going to get into a real good story here at the end. Well, maybe not so good for you,
okay.
but the end results was good. So now we're back in the United States, and you and Carol are living where? You had earlier said you started, you wanted to go back to college.
Yeah, we went back to college, and I went to the University of North Dakota in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and finished up my college career in 2.5 years, become a certified public accountant, and we moved on down to Excelsior, Minnesota, where I worked for an accounting firm there. And that was about the time we got down there and got settled in that we found out my wife was pregnant.
And how old were you then?
I was 27 years old.
27. And you've lived a full life pretty much by the age of 27.
I'd lived a lot of life, let me tell you.
That's awesome. So your wife found out she was pregnant, and where do we go from there?
Well, back in those days, you know, we didn't have insurance, but it didn't cost much. I think it was $600 to have the wife go in, and Desiree was born, our first child.
Oh.
And beautiful young lady, proud of her.
And you have another daughter. And
her name is Amy, and she come along 3 years later. And again, another beautiful child.
And you have any grandkids?
I have 3 grandkids. The oldest daughter has a girl that just graduated from the University of Minnesota, is now attending St. Thomas and going to get her degree and master's degree in psychology. And my other daughter has a son who just started at the University of Minnesota and a daughter who's a junior in high school.
That's awesome. And I've met your daughters. We'll get into that later because I met them under the circumstance we're going to be talking about. So you raised your family. Anything exciting through them years? When did retirement happen? When did you end up coming down? We're in Arizona at a snowbird community. That's where I met you. So,
well, for me, I was very fortunate in my career. I went through 10 years of owning a partnership in a CPA business, got out of that and got into a management position. And in that management position, we would always have conventions, et cetera, in February. And they were always in California, Arizona, Texas, Florida, or New Orleans. And whenever we came, California, Arizona, or Texas, we often ended up down here in Mesa, Arizona. And looking for opportunity, you could come into one of those communities like we live in today and go up to the center, and there would be some place you could rent for $25 a day, and the seventh day was free. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got exposed to Arizona and decided when I retired, this is what I wanted to do.
So what's your reverse 6 months when you go back, when you leave here and April or whatever, where do you go and what do you do when you get back there?
Well, we've got a home still in Thief River Falls, but we have lake property and down in Otter Tail, Minnesota. And it's a great life. I stay very involved in that, but I've always been a fisherman, a hunter. I've had lots of great experiences doing all those sort of things. I was managed to buy the lake property when my oldest granddaughter was 1 year old, and I got to watch my grandkids grow up there.
That's impressive.
It was a beautiful deal.
Mine are coming out here in about a month, and there's nothing better than just hanging out with the grandkids.
You know, and then, of course, they turn 15, and they—
Yeah, they leave. I'm a ways away from that, yeah. So. All right, Russ, now we're going to get on to the story that the reason I asked you to be on the podcast, and you had major cardiac arrest while playing pickleball here at our property in Mesa, Arizona. And I was at the court at 9:30 that morning, or I was leaving at 9:30, and I seen a lady open the gate, and say, Russ, are you okay? And I thought, that's weird. You know, I didn't know what was going on. And I went back to my place, and at 10:15, I got a phone call that Russ was in cardiac arrest, and you could hear the ambulance. So why don't you tell the story, what you remember, and what, why was she asking you if you were okay?
That morning we have a competition down here that's called Ladders. And we were playing that game of ladders, and I was suffering some heartburn. This is something that's happened in the past. Probably should have adhered to it as a warning, but I played through it. And I was having some of those issues. So they were asking, well, Russ, are you okay? Do you want someone to step in? I said, no. We'll do all right. We'll play through this. Well, unbeknownst to me, I was serving, and the next day, when I woke up, I was in the hospital, and it was about 24 hours later that I came to. So my recollection of what went on was the game, who was my partner, who was there, but after I was just serving, and then I was in a heap on the ground, and no pain, no nothing, just down, gone.
Well, I'll talk a little bit about the property, and I know you've heard the same thing I did. I heard it. Well, I took it in a little earlier than you because you were in the hospital for how long?
I ended up in there 12 days.
And how long did you knew in one day where you were at? The next day you woke up?
Well, you wake up in the morning, they've got you kind of protecting yourself and got your hands wrapped up so you can't. It's an uneasy feeling, let me tell you. But they had your esophagus and air and all that going, so you couldn't talk. So I got their attention and then got them to bring me a notepad, and I could ask them, where am I and why?
Oh, wow. And, well, talking to people on the property, it almost sounds like a perfect storm the way it happened, because you went into cardiac arrest, you're on the ground, and Brad, he started compressions or CPR, correct me if I'm wrong or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely correct.
Then Lorna, who's a nurse, ran and got the defibrillator off the bathrooms. Pat picked up her phone and dialed 911 right away, and then somebody ran down to the gate to guide the ambulance when they come in the property, and I was told that the EMTs or whatever happened to be driving by, because this is a busy area. They don't always get here in 2 minutes. So, and I know, seeing you, it looks like there's no damage done to you. I know you had, but I mean, you're not wearing it. So I think everything went pretty good.
I'm a very fortunate fellow. I heard EMT say, well, there's another. I said, wait a minute, boys. Pickleball saved my life.
First, they said there's another pickleball player?
There's another pickleball injury, or player.
Right.
And I said, wait a minute, boys. Pickleball saved my life. First thing, I'm 79 years old. I'm in pretty darn good condition for a 79-year-old guy playing that game. And I was surrounded by pickleball players who are loving, caring. It's a family. And versatility of experience. And they knew exactly what to do. And I'm blessed, to say the least.
It was amazing hearing about it. And then I met your daughters, so I have two daughters, and that tears you. They come up big, and they should, and they did. They're just paying dad his due. Since they didn't pay your rent, they're paying you.
Yeah, there you go.
and so you went into major cardiac arrest, and what's the difference between cardiac arrest and a heart attack?
Or I always call them, one is a plumbing issue and one's a electrical issue.
Oh.
A plumbing issue is usually when you have a heart attack, you've got blood flow problems, and you're damaged parts of your heart. And a cardiac arrest, your heart just stops beating because it doesn't have the proper signal to keep on beating. So my heart just stopped. I had no pain, none of those sort of things. And, thank gosh, Lorna, who is trained. She was a 35-year room operating nurse, and she knew how to run that equipment.
And she's afraid of nothing.
And she's afraid of nothing.
She is. She's a good girl. The whole group, that all them people we named are very good people.
Fantastic people.
So you said you were a medic in Vietnam. So what is a medic? I mean, I know, but I don't know. Just like I don't know what a cardiac arrest is versus a heart attack, but now I do. So
well, a medic is someone that when you end up in the services, picked to get some medical training in dealing with obviously gunshot wounds, injuries, traumatic things like that, compressions, keeping people alive until you can evac. And that's what he's doing. And you do some other things, handling, you know, minor issues and decide whether people need to get to see a doctor's and all that sort of thing. But you don't have too much of that when you're with a bunch of 20-year-old people. But my group, I was the medic. We had about 70 people in engineering, and my responsibility was to oversee it, see their health needs, and when it happened, to take care of them and stop the bleedings and do whatever was necessary.
So did that help you bring the talent that you have down here? You're a helper. I mean, you work the pancake breakfast. You get the coffee ready every morning. You can't sit still.
I've always been a goer and a doer. Whether it's here or back home, as just my nature. Back home, I had a neighbor, a friend who was looking to find someone to help raise money to build pickleball courts. And we went to work and we raised the money, $64,000, and we built ourselves 3 pickleball courts in Thief River Falls.
How long ago was that?
That's going back about 5 years now.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for you. So, you know, on the property, Russ, if they had a president and you ran for president, you'd get a lot of votes because you treat people well. You do. And them people that helped you, I seen them that day and they were hurt.
Yes. You know, it's a community. I just feel that's, I'm not the only one. That's a nature.
No, but you treat people good, and it was easy for them to give it back. You know, you're a great guy. Because of your cardiac arrest and the whole situation, have you seen any changes on the property or anything done differently?
Yeah. So as a result of this, the pickleball group and the chairman of the pickleball group met with staff here and management and see if we could get CPR training. And we got one coming up here on February 26th. We've got over 80 people, over 10% of the population in this park attending that CPR class. That's a great achievement.
That's a big number.
And hopefully this happens other places too. They also bought additional defibrillators and stationed them throughout the complex. And so all that's isn't up. We don't know when this might happen for someone else. It's
no, that's great.
Positive.
We're in a 55 and older community, so it's not uncommon. I mean, all of us have friends die every year or people getting sick. There's so much cancer-related stuff going on. Just the amount of people, you know, you talk about 10% signed up for this. There might be 10% that have cancer, knock on wood, but realistically, just because of our ages and that, but... So, Russ, if you got anything else to say, I'm going to let you say it now, but otherwise I'm going to ask you a few questions. And
well, you know, you can never, I'm a blessed man every day I wake up. And those people, I'll be beholding to them forever.
Yeah, you know, and you played your first game of pickleball, I didn't even mention you. Your heart attack was December 9th. You were released January 23rd, and you played your first game of pickleball less than, what's that, a month and a half? Basically 7 weeks, whatever, with those other three people who you're on the court with.
Yes.
And Fox Arizona News came and did a story on you, and I'm going to attach the link to this podcast if people would like to put your face with the voice, not my face with the voice, but I am going to attach it. It was a great. I just got back in Arizona that day and I rushed home and they said it was going to be on Fox. And I got in here at 5:18 and I think it was on at 5:23 was the first time they showed it. And it looked like you guys had a good time that day. And there was a lot of happy people and you had a good crowd there too.
It was a great turnout. We got to tell the story. And the objective is it's a human interest story, but it was also a very good story to get out to the public that, you know, there's facilities that don't have that equipment on hand. There's places that don't have it. Maybe we'll get the message out that you need to have these things on hand.
Well, even, you know, that's the idea of my podcast. Hopefully it helps people of age with anything, you know, a little comfort or little knowledge, you know, yes. And go from there. So, Russ, I'm going to ask you this. I'm going to say that you're 80 years old. You won't be for a month. But what would 80-year-old Russ tell 70-year-old Russ?
You know, boy, that's a tough question. Keep loving. Keep caring. Family, number one. Always family is always number one with me. And in these communities down here in Arizona, we're family.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. And so these people are number one.
My wife just said to me yesterday and had nothing to do with this. She goes, man, we really know a lot of people down here. We've been here 10 years. We came in 2014. How long have you been here?
Well, I'm 1 year behind you.
1 year behind, yeah. 2015. So.
Yes.
All right. So what's a perfect day for Russ Christensen? What's it consist of from morning till night?
Oh, a great day for me is to get up and have coffee with the boys about 6:15 in the morning. Come home, shower, get ready, go down, play pickleball. And play pickleball for an hour and a half, 2 hours. Come on home, share a light breakfast with the wife, and then go about our joys and business of being here, sun tanning, doing all the normal things we do. It's a couple card games here and there, and just filling in our day. And my wife is a little insecure on some issues. And so I'm glad I'm there for her. So we always go down most days at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when the music starts and have ourselves a cocktail or two and enjoy the music and participate in any of the type of events they have around here.
It's fun to see spouses of your 10 years and that, and just the appreciation that you build up, because marriage is tough.
Yeah.
I mean, my wife's a lucky woman, you know, not every woman's that lucky, you know, so hope she don't listen to this podcast. So.
I'm a lucky man.
You are a lucky man. Yes. So the last thing I'm going to ask you, Russ, is how would you like to be remembered?
Well, just as someone that is respected for making his own way in the world, for caring for other people, you know, loved by his children, and loves his family. I don't know what more else completes life than that.
You will be remembered for all that. Well, I'd like to thank Russ for being my guest today. And this is Fat Grandpa, and hopefully we help somebody out there. And until next time.